Hello, this is Aaron, and welcome back to the podcast. Today, I want to talk about the non-linearity of change. First, I want to tell you something that has happened to me multiple times, and if it's happened to me, it's probably happened to you, which is this. There will be some event or happening in my life that causes me to take special notice. I say, well, that's interesting. And then later in life, that same sort of interesting element of what I'm observing recurs. And I start to notice there's a pattern. And I say, wow, maybe that's a pattern in my life or the way that I operate. And then later in life, I discover, wait a minute, this is a general principle of how the world operates. It just takes a long time to figure that out. So here's an example. In high school, I learned to type. I took typing class. I actually won the typing award. There's nothing I feel better about in terms of high school accomplishments than winning the typing award because I was excellent academically. This was not an intrinsically academic subject. It was going to count on my GPA, but it turned out I was a really good typist. But as I was learning all the different keys, I had trouble typing Z's. And a Z, if you know, is typed with your left pinky, so if you're right-handed, it's maybe the most difficult thing to learn to type. And especially at the time, we were learning on manual typewriters. And of course, there were electric typewriters then. We actually switched to electrics, but our teacher was old school. She's like, you need to learn how to type on a manual to get the best form and really know how to strike the keys. And then once you've learned to type on that, then the class is going to switch over to the electric typewriters. And so it took me a long time. I just can't quite get that Z right. And then one day I just came into class and boom, I could type Z's perfectly. I'm like, what happened? I just, all of a sudden I know how to do it. Similar thing happened to me when it came to learning how to drive a stick shift. So my dad had this Jeep CJ7, which is probably sort of like the Wrangler today. And it was a 5-speed manual transmission. And I could drive it. Wasn't like I couldn't drive it, but I just wasn't confident at it. It was a little rough. It's just thing. And one day I took the car and I decided to go to the mall. I was driving to the mall. I remember exactly this moment because I was going to Green Tree Mall in Clarksville, Indiana, and I was coming off of the expressway at this place called Charlestown Road. I was going to turn onto Blackstone Mill Road, which went there, and I realized, wait a minute, I can drive a stick shift. I just know how to do it. It's perfect. I don't have any problems with it anymore. And I, over time, this happened to me so many times, I always just began by my 30s to describe the way that I learned this way. That basically I'm learning and I'm learning and I'm struggling and then boom, it's like there's this Zen-like flash of insight and I just spontaneously master something. And of course, it was not until I was in my 40s that I realized this is how it works for basically everybody. We all have non-linear progress. We don't just get better incrementally over time, incremental mastery. And of course, there's elements of which that is true, but it's very common for our progress to occur in leaps, quantum leaps, in which we all of a sudden make just big step-up improvements, seemingly almost at random after we've been seeking to master something. So change, progress, and self-improvement is not linear. It involves quantum leap type things. Now, what I'm telling you is not at all new, not at all insightful. In fact, it's a complete staple of the self-improvement literature that people will tell you change is quantum, change is nonlinear, etc. It just took me a really long time to figure it out because nobody told me that. When nobody tells you things like this, then it can take decades to accumulate enough observations to finally draw a pattern about the world. And I found this happen in a lot of things. And this is one reason that there are so many self-improvement gurus out there. One of the reasons is because they tell you things like this that your parents didn't tell you, that your teachers didn't tell you. Basic insights into how the world operates, how people operate, that you didn't get from the people who should have given them to you. Now, of course, Maybe they didn't know. I'm not saying they were deliberately, nefariously holding things back, although there are definitely things in life where that's the case, that they were telling us things that were not true. If you were a Gen X guy raised in the 80s, your mind was filled with a lot of nonsense and took much later in life to find out that they'd been giving you a lot of nonsense. But this is just one you picked up. So if you are a parent, if you are a teacher, this is something that you can point out to people as they experience these as they experience this in their own life. As they experience nonlinear progress, you can point out that this is a general principle of the world. And this sort of thing happens in social change as well. There's an expression, I don't know who originally came up with it, but you hear it all the time, in some various variations. There are years in which nothing happens, and then there are weeks in which years happen. And this is an expression of this idea of the nonlinearity of change. And I'll just give a very simple example of that. Business casual clothing. So when I started work in Chicago, coming out of college, everyone still wore suits to work. It was pretty universal in the corporate world that you just wore a suit to work. That's what you did. But when the dot-com boom came along, there was a very rapid shift in corporate America, you know, within a very short period of time, to almost totally business casual environment. So I noticed this when I would go to lunch in downtown Chicago. There was this deli that I like to go to called Perry's Deli. I don't even know if it's still there anymore, but it was awesome. You know, huge sandwiches, delicious. And Perry, who sold it a long time ago, used to take pictures of his regular customers and put them on the wall in what he called his Perry's celebrity boards. And I was on his celebrity board, I'm happy to say. In 1997, I remember that his celebrity board from 1997, 75%+ of the people who were in, you know, pictured there were wearing suits. By his 2000 celebrity board, it had flipped. At least 75% were wearing business casual. So between 97 and 2000, there was a tremendous inversion in the way people dressed. And after the dot-com collapsed, there was a pendulum shift back to some level. People didn't wear Dockers and polos to the office anymore like they'd been wearing in the dot-com era. You're wearing a dress shirt and a blue blazer, but you didn't go back to the suit. You didn't go back to the tie. And so this change happened, and it was a permanent shift. We didn't go back. There was no going back to the suit. Corporations were not going to be able to impose the suit. And it just happened that a couple of my clients held on to suits a lot longer than other people did. But even they have made the shift now, I believe. And outside of a handful of elite sectors, or maybe government, certain sectors of government or media, you don't see a lot of people wearing suits anymore. And in Europe, I notice when I watch TV in Europe, a lot of people show up on TV without wearing suits, which in the U.S., I think is still pretty standard that you show up to a suit when you go to the TV studio to appear on TV. Now, we'll begin with Zoom. Maybe that'll change, but we'll see. So that was just a fundamental shift in the way things happen. It was just a small example. What I labeled the transition from the neutral to the negative world in kind of the evangelical environment is very similar to that. We had massive social shifts that occurred during President Obama's second term. We had what has been called the Great Awakening, which you might date maybe the start of it to around 2012 with the Trayvon Martin shooting. Probably around 2014 is when it really took off. And that was something that just, whoom, it just blew up in a very short period of time. There was also a massive sea change in gay acceptance in society during that time frame. It wasn't just that the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage in 2015. It's that there really was a massive shift in social environments in that world. So there was a lot of things that happened in that sort of 2012-2016 time frame that really has had a major impact. And this is one of the reasons that the evangelical church has really struggled to adapt, because that has rendered the old ways in which they did business ineffective, essentially obsolete. It doesn't work anymore. You're trying the same old things that you always did, and they didn't work. I lived through another similar one in the business. I'll give one more example here, which is offshoring. In the year 2000, Anderson Consulting, Accenture, the company that I work for, consultancy, huge global consulting company, did a lot of technology projects, had 500 maybe employees in India. And the people who were there in India were there primarily to serve local clients or to handle the Indian aspect of whatever project we were doing for a huge global company. So if you're doing like a massive global IT rollout or something like that, you need to be able to implement it in every country in which people do business. So you have to have a presence basically every place that people do business in order to do that. Well, that's about the time that companies like Infosys, Wipro started coming along and proving out the offshoring model of being able to use the internet in order to offshore business process and technology work to India. And that radically changed the nature of the business. There was no more doing all this work with high-priced onshore consultants anymore. If you wanted to stay in business, you basically had to build up massive offshore capabilities to do that. And I don't know how many people Accenture has in India today. I'm going to guess it's over 200,000, though. Massive, massive growth in that industry. And it completely disrupted the entire business model. And if you cannot adapt to these business model disruptions, you are done. And that's what we see throughout society. And here's another one I'll just lay out there right now that is going to affect cities. So I'm kind of a city guy. I write a lot about cities. This is one that is going to affect cities big time, and it's remote work. We had this pandemic that hit. Basically, every corporation in America had to send people home for close to 2 years. Nobody was coming into the office. Everybody started doing work over Zoom. Everybody started doing remote work, and it fundamentally changed how business got done in America, and it fundamentally changed the expectations of employees in terms of the kinds of work that they're going to be doing, and it showed corporate leaders as well that being in person was not necessary for people to work. And now we have a problem where the downtowns of major American cities have been built primarily around office workers as the core economic driver of what they're doing. If you think of a downtown, it has a lot of things going on. It has government-type activities, typically. It has a sort of civic monuments and things of that nature. It has a convention and tourism aspect of it. So there are various things going on. There's a residential aspect. There historically was a retail aspect, but the business, the corporations, were really the bread and butter of the economy of these places, in places like Midtown Manhattan. And there's a reason that they often refer to downtowns as central business districts. It's about business. And all of a sudden, nobody's going back to the office. And so the economies of these downtowns kind of died in a lot of ways. And yes, much like with casual clothes, there has been a reversion back. People are not 100% remote anymore in most cases, but even most corporations are now basically going with what's called a hybrid model, where they say you have to come into the office 3 days a week, for example, or 2 days a week, and you can work remote the rest of the time. Well, even if you lose 20% of the headcount of people who are in your downtown, that's like a 20% hit is like huge. And so there's been a lot of concern over the future there and what it means for urban America when the ability to attract people is no longer tied to the job. It used to be one of the ways you attracted people to your city was by having a job there that they wanted to get. Well, if they can get the job and still live where they actually want to live, not in your city, well, that's going to be a very different story. What you're going to see, it's going to affect places like where I live, Indianapolis, which are not hot destinations, not the worst destinations, but it's not Austin, Texas. So when these corporations are trying to recruit top people who are in demand, much more likely to tell them they can live wherever they want. We're not going to make you move to Indianapolis. It's going to change the game. It's really going to be civically very different. And it's something that happened in a very short period of time. And the key is we're not going back. We're not going back. Not to say that we're going to stay how it is now and there's going to be shifts in employer-employee relationships over time, if we go into a recession, employers are going to be able to make more demands. But I don't think we're going to go back. Much like casual clothes, I don't know that we're ever going to go back to the norm expectation of 5 days a week in the office, except in certain types of industries. And again, once you reach a certain level, too, it's like all bets are off. You've got to be all consumed by your career, whatever it takes, if you want to really succeed at that level. And so this idea of nonlinear change is very important in society as well. It affects business. It affects religion. It affects a lot of things that something happens. And the way that things worked for a very long time all of a sudden don't work anymore. And this could be an unsettling shift. It's great when you learn how to type a Z. It's great when you learn how to drive the stick shift and that feeling of progress. That non-linearity is great when you're trying to make progress and you have these, you know, dopamine hits from the rewards. You've got to be aware of that too. But it's really in these social changes, which can have sort of negative or disruptive or unsettling effects, that we also need to be aware of. And we need to figure out, take a step back sometimes and recognize, has something fundamentally changed here? And if it has, how do what we are doing needs to change in order to adjust to this new environment? Because if you don't change successfully, then you're really gonna find yourself in trouble. And this is what happens to a lot of companies. This is what happens to a lot of people. The world shifts, and they're unable to successfully adapt. And shifting can be very, very, very hard. If the skill set that I have suddenly became automatable by artificial intelligence, the idea that I could just reinvent myself at my age and remain economically relevant, that's very, very hard. It's very audacious. It's like when the plant closes and like, well, we'll just retrain the workers. It's not that simple, right? You can't just tell people, learn to code. It's hard at the individual level. It's hard at the organization level, but these are the things that happen, and we have to be prepared for change. And one of the things that I would say about our world is that it is a world of rapid change, and nobody likes change. The writer Eric Hoffer, sometimes called the Longshoreman Philosopher, he wrote the book The True Believer, sort of about fanaticism. He wrote a book called The Ordeal of Change, and he talked about how nobody likes change. And he was a migrant farm worker in the Depression in California, and he talked about when he went from picking, say, beans to picking peas, no matter how similar it seemed, there was always this unsettling effect. It's like most of us just don't like change, but change is a reality, change is a constant, and we need to be aware that change is simply not linear. And so although we can't predict the discontinuities that are going to occur either in our own life or in society, we need to be aware that those are happening. And this is something, especially at the personal level, that we could very much do a better job of at educating our children, that they will just understand this pattern of non-linear change so that they don't take them 40 years to figure out what's going on like it took me. And like maybe it took you with a lot of things. When you see to yourself in your 40s, hey, I wish I'd known when I was 18 all this stuff. Well, this is our opportunity to make sure that the next generation does know it. So you don't have to pay for that self-improvement course. I just gave you the one little tip that progress is nonlinear. So hope this is helpful to you, and I will talk to you next week.